You didn't get to see it, but Mike Johnson was dancing in studio earlier. And you know what? Like, not bad. Wow. I'm actually, like, I was a little surprised. Like, you kind of, you've got some rhythm to your step.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like I'm at a Nelly concert, per se. So I haven't got that going for me.
Touché,
but
sir.
I did grow up in an area that had music with a lot of beat to it in high school.
Yeah, and that helped.
Yes.
In your
journey to finding
the beat of a song.
Yes. Exactly.
Do guys, like, when you were playing, like, was there like ever dance parties in the dressing room?
No, you know what? It's
anything
no,
like that?
Not no, because generally speaking, guys are not great dancers.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say, generally speaking, hockey players are not great dancers. Some
Fair.
Are, I'm sure, but
of course.
Most might not be.
Uh-huh.
And so the odd time you get in an environment where there's either music you want to dance to or you're having fun or you're
whatever
at a house party or at a club or whatever, and no, there's very little participation. I would be out there, whatever, having fun, and I'd be like, Where's everybody?
Oh, that's
solo
funny.
Mission, yeah.
Solo mission when you're out with the boys.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit.
Just had to carry the banner for everyone.
All right. Well, I'm sure you did a good job of that.
Willing participant, anyways.
Yeah. Well, now you're a willing participant in the Puck Culture podcast.
Am
and
I?
We love having you on. Are you?
Yes, I am.
Have you been forced to do this?
No, I'm excited to be here. This is good.
My goodness.
What a start.
You know, I'm glad you're here because, you know, you and I go back a few years now to before my time at NHL Network. And I got on the ice yesterday.
I saw.
For the first time in 8 years. It might be longer. Like, it's definitely the first time in over 10 years that I've been on the ice with a hockey stick.
Right.
And my goodness, a lot changes when you haven't been on the ice in so long.
I will say this. So I think I've seen clips of you skating once before somewhere. And then I saw just a little clip you posted yesterday. And were those your own skates?
No,
rentals, right?
I didn't. So here's the
backstory. Do you have skates still?
I have skates still, but they're 12 years old. Like, they're skates I used to play, but they're mine, they're molded to my foot.
That's right.
They are my skates. So the reason I didn't have my own skates, because I know someone's going to ask me this on social media, you played hockey, you don't have your own skates? I have my own skates. They're at my parents' house in London, Ontario.
Right.
And the shoot, because this is how the TV business is, was not confirmed until Sunday night.
Don't we know
so
it?
I didn't have time to get my skates shipped up for the shoot. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get my old CCM tacks up to New Jersey for the shoot with Amanda Kessel. I posted a clip, if you haven't seen it, it's on my Twitter account, because she is going to be doing some demos for our all-female edition of NHL Now next week. And Amanda Kessel's, first off, incredible.
Yes.
She's so great. And I was out there in rental skates. I'm telling you, I know I sound like I'm making excuses, but I had no edges on my left skate.
Listen,
it was bad.
I did a shoot last week at the same place.
Yeah.
Not confirmed until 2 days before. I had already been on the road. I went out there without my skates.
Yes.
I went out with the rentals.
How was it?
And I was trying to be Alex Ovechkin. So, needless to say, not my glove, not my stick, not my skates. You know, you don't. But I will say this. I don't know what the move is called, but when you watch it, check out Jackie Redmond's Instagram, Twitter feeds, because you did like a pivot on a knee with a no-edge pivot, which is not easy to do. There's a term for it in figure skating, but basically you're just kind of sliding in the middle, not changing edges. Not easy to do, and I was impressed.
Thank you. The pass, terrible.
We can talk about that. I need more wrist rolling. I need more cuppage. I need a lot of things. But when it came to the celebration and that pivot,
thank you.
I'm like, okay. She has skated before.
Yes,
I respect the edge work.
I can skate.
Not bad at all,
Jax. And the hard part, too, first of all, I have a bruise on my knee from that.
From dropping
down? Because I didn't have shin pads on or any of that stuff.
Like a little lunge.
It was worth
it,
though. Listen, I was too elementary for that, okay? I need like a few skates in before I'm hovering above the ice. But I will say this, like, what I was nervous about in doing it, because at first, like, we were just getting B-roll for the footage. Like, the demos were done.
Yeah.
And Kessel carried those, because I was like, you know what? Like,
right.
I'm willing to embarrass myself to a point, but, like, I'm not going to be doing these drills.
Right.
So, anyways, we're like, let's just get some B-roll. Just pass Amanda a couple pucks. Let her take some shots just for, like, setup purposes. And she was like, oh, we should like celebrate after, like we've got like a goal celebration. I'm like, okay, well, like, let's just see what happens.
Right.
And, you know, we just kind of like did the turn. We had planned the turn the first time. And then the second time, which is what you saw on there, was like, let's like do a spin and point, because the cameras didn't get it the first time. Cameras didn't get it. They were like, oh, we got our shots. They're like taking off. And we're like, are you not listening to this idea that's being born right now?
We're going to spin
and point at each other. It's going to be awesome. So Diana from our social media team was like, don't worry, I'll get it. Because the camera crew literally just got on. They didn't care. They were like, we don't care about your little celebration, okay? So, of course, one member of our social media team was like, I'll film it on my phone. Like, okay. So we do it. I was more nervous about the spin and the point I knew I could do. I was nervous about getting up from that position afterwards.
The backwards one knee down?
Yes, I'm like, because that's where the wipeout's going to happen. And fortunately, I did not wipe out. But yeah, the pass was trash.
Much better than Jameson Coyle's attempt at the kicking goal with the over the boards guys.
You know what, though? When you're taking direction from on the bench, that's what happens to you. Well, right?
He was in Cairo treatments for months from that
call. You know what?
There you go.
If you haven't seen it, Jameson Coyle tried to do a sort of punt type celebration. Yeah. And completely wiped out, to the point, like, the first time I saw it, I was like, is he okay? Yes? Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Okay. But, yeah, so the pass was trash.
No.
That's the one thing.
You and I we got to say
that. And I know.
Stick was too long, for starters.
Well, that's all they had for me. Last minute shoes, Jack Eichel stick.
I watched it twice, and I'm like, okay, we got to work on this.
First of all, can we just have, like, Johnny, of all people, is the first guy to be like, hang on, roll that tape back. I need to analyze what's happening here. I had a couple, I'm going to call them trolls because that's what they are, people ripping Amanda Kessel for a shot. And I was just like, I just want to know what Olympics you played in, because that was a terrible pass. It was like not a rolling puck, but you know when it like does that,
puck,
like a bobbling puck, not in the area where it's supposed to be.
Amanda Kessel's not known for her big slapper anyways, because she can skate the wheels off anybody and goes right in, and she's like her brother. She doesn't take slappers, she takes wristers.
Yeah. But you know what? It kind of put things in perspective for me from a social media standpoint, when people critique me about what I do and whatever. And I'm just like, it does not matter who you are.
No.
Like, you will get people.
She is one of the best hockey players in the world.
Yes.
And some person, guy, girl,
troll,
is going to take a run at her because she didn't shoot it like Shea Weber.
Yeah.
Like,
on a pass from me. Like, terrible.
On a funsy little shoot.
Yeah, yes. That means nothing. Yeah, so
don't sweat it. If they're taking runs at you, they're taking runs at her, they're taking runs at anybody. Clearly.
Anyone's fair game on Twitter.
They shouldn't be,
sure.
But they are.
But you know what? I will say this, too, and I know we're kind of going down this long tangent about me skating yesterday. We are going to talk actual hockey in a second.
Yeah, that's good.
By the way, also, World Championships coming up in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Yes.
So I'm going to try to get to some of those games because I'm out there a lot.
Right.
So I'm actually
so
super
pumped.
So long
as they still are going on.
Yes. Oh,
which
let's
maybe
hope.
We'll talk about
hopefully
in a week or two.
Let's hope that still happens, but who knows with what's going on in the world today. But I will say this. I haven't been on the ice in so long, and it's been even longer since I've had a hockey stick in my hand on the ice. It, like, reinvigorated my passion. I was like, man, I need to get my father to send my skates, send my stick, buy me a new stick if you want. Like, send me some stuff, and I want
to
get
a stick. We have sticks everywhere here. We'll just cut you down. You're a righty.
Yeah, well, it'll need to be cut down, that's for sure. I'm a lefty.
Oh, you're a lefty?
I'm a lefty, yeah. Anyways, I want to get out on the ice more.
What we're going to do, we're bringing Diana with it.
If anyone has a league that needs a player.
We're going to have a storage locker room set aside in our building here, and all of our people who play hockey will have their stuff in the locker room.
I think that's a great idea.
And we have the sticks, gloves, and skates.
Would you skate with me? Would you get me back into form?
We'll go to our ice thing, and we'll have a little fun. We'll shoot. We can do demos. We can horse around.
I like
it. Time.
Let's run some ice.
Run some ice. Get EJ out there running drills, the coach that he is.
It'd be so much fun.
That's my proposal.
I like
it. We'll table it after the show.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, let's talk real hockey, not Jackie trying to go back to her, like, 18-year-old days of actually
being able to play. When was the last time you played? Like,
in a real game?
Like, in a game, like, you played, like, competitively or, like, in a league somehow growing up?
I played in two leagues growing up. Like, I played high school hockey, and then I played for a competitive league outside, all the way through high school. And then I moved away for college, and I played 1 year. So I would have been 19 maybe.
It's like 4 or 5 years ago.
Because I did the extra year of high school, too. Like, I did the victory lap. So, yeah, I would have been 18, 19 since the last time I played full equipment right. in a real game. I did a bunch of like street hockey stuff in Toronto for charity, but nothing on skates. It's not the same at all. I can still skate, and Leon Draisaitl can still score four goals the other night. Like, this guy has certainly proven himself outside of Connor McDavid. Like, that's not an attachment anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that narrative, however true or false it might have been, and I think there was probably some truth to it the last couple of years. He's played an awful lot with Connor, and Connor makes everyone look good, but Leon benefits from playing with Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid benefits from playing with Leon Draisaitl.
Yes, let's not forget.
It's a symbiotic relationship. Old school science. But for the last 6 weeks, when Edmonton's really kind of taken off and played well here, they haven't played together hardly at all 5-on-5.
And when McDavid was out, he was phenomenal.
When Connor wasn't even in the lineup, and the idea that somehow Connor carries the power play instead of Leon, when they both carry a power play. So, yes, he is showing that he is one of the best offensive players in the league. No question, he can do things that size. That big paddle that he uses, the backhand passes, ability to finish from all different angles. The fourth goal in Nashville, that kind of weird, like a basketball player backing down the block, gets a stick out, sealed them off, took a backhand pass and a no-look shot. Almost they were chuckling because I've seen them try it before and not pull it off in a game, so they pulled that one off. McDavid had 5 points that night and didn't gain ground in the scoring race. In fact, he probably lost ground because the goal scoring is the tiebreaker. So, yeah, Leon has separated himself from that storyline that he can't do without Connor, because it's been Nugent Hopkins and Yamamoto, and then Nugent Hopkins and somebody else when Yamamoto was down. And, yes, I understand he gets a ton of points in the power play, but if you look at points, percentage of points gained, Pasternak has almost a very similar percentage of his points on the power play as Draisaitl.
People love that argument these days, eh? Well, even strength versus power play.
Well, I mean, I think there's something to it, but you can't dismiss power play. Like, you can't act like it's
not
part of the game.
It counts for something, yeah.
Like, it's a really important part of the game. It's a reason why Edmonton's going to make the playoffs. They're running at 30%. So, like, you can't put me on the power play and they'd be 30%. There is a skill
required.
And it's
going to make a difference for them in the playoffs if teams take penalties against them. I know they're not called as much in the postseason.
So long as they're called, yes.
The ones that do get called, the egregious ones.
For sure.
Edmonton's going to be a team that's going to make you pay for it when it really counts. So.
And I was trying to think, though, when was the last time, and we had to go back, so he's not yet in the Rocket top three, but he's close. He's gaining quickly.
Yes, he's coming up.
So the last time someone has won the Art Ross leading scorer, the Rocket most goals, the Hart MVP, and the Ted Lindsay player MVP.
Who would be the last person to do that?
It was Ovi.
It was Ovi. Well, what year would that have been?
Like 06, 07. He had 65,
oh, like
112.
Ovi.
Yeah, second or third year.
Excuse me.
The last guy to run all four off. And if Leon can catch in the Rocket race, he's going to win all four. We can debate whether I think he should.
Yes.
But he will. And that will be, you know, it's a historic achievement. Amazing stuff. He's putting on a show. And it's so interesting. So many parts about it, like the Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl conversation and who helps who and how good is Leon and all the rest of it. There's the contract conversation, because when he signed that contract, a lot of people, myself included, said that's probably more than he deserved at that moment. Now, of course, he's outperforming it by a country mile now.
Yeah.
But in the moment, I also thought that that was probably a little high for him. There's a lot going on for him there, but he has just gone out there and proven now a couple years in a row that he is
as legit as they
easily
come.
Top five offensive player in the league, easily.
So based on everything that you just said and what you've seen from Draisaitl this year specifically, it seems like the general consensus is Draisaitl is the runaway favorite for the Hart Trophy, for the league MVP. He is the guy, no one else has a chance. We play this game with Johnny a lot on NHL Network because it's fun and he's capable of doing it. It's called Johnny on the Spot on NHL Network, but right now we'll just say Leon Draisaitl or the field. Make the argument for someone other than Draisaitl. Is it possible to do so based on what Draisaitl's doing?
The key words you just said, runaway leader, and is it possible? No, he's not a runaway leader.
Okay.
And yes, it's very possible to make a compelling case for a different person. That's not to suggest that Leon Draisaitl shouldn't be a finalist. That's not to suggest he won't likely win. I can make a great case for him.
And he's the favorite, for sure.
He's probably the favorite now, and the way he's playing down the stretch is solidifying his position there.
Sure.
But I can make a very compelling case for Artemi Panarin.
Yes, please,
do it. The bread man. So, I mean, because
love it.
Hart Trophy is value. Not best, value.
Something we now, always have to clarify this time of year.
And people interpret that differently.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people just think most valuable just means the best. And you can, there's no wrong answer to this, but however you interpret that. But when it comes to value, start looking at the numbers when Artemi Panarin is on the ice and when he's not on the ice. And with the Rangers, when Artemi Panarin's on the ice, they are great. When he's not, they are terrible. You know, I'm
it's
using extreme words. But they're not, like, he's when he's on the ice, the goal differential, he's like a plus 35.
Yeah.
When
yep.
he's not, they're like a minus 30.
So that's a big swing.
He is the biggest in the league, when I looked at it a couple days ago, between his, when he's on the ice, goal differential, to when he's not.
Right.
You know, Nathan McKinnon's up there, but Leon Draisaitl's not. Leon, in fact, when he's on the ice 5-on-5, he's basically a net zero player. Now, some of that's empty netters. I know, Edmonton fans. I know.
Simmer down.
Relax. I get it. Some of it's his terrible December, which you have to factor in.
Yeah.
But 5-on-5, Artemi Panarin has been the best player in the NHL.
Do the Rangers have to make the playoffs for Panarin to win?
In this case, yes.
What Draisaitl's doing.
Yes, because if you're going to win the MVP and not be on a playoff team, you have to lap the field.
Yeah.
You have to have 150 points to Leon's 120. You have to be so much better because, you know, at some point, value has to translate into points, and points, generally speaking,
sure.
translates into playoffs. So if you're not going to make the playoffs, I'm not hard and fast. You can't win unless you make the playoffs. But you have to be so much better than the guys who are around you, whose teams probably are having more success. Their value is translating to points. But I can make the case for Panarin, given who he plays with, given the rest of his team that is there, the fact that the Rangers are sniffing around the playoffs, that you can make a very compelling case for Panarin. Same kind of deal for Nathan McKinnon in Colorado, because he's had so many guys hurt. Played great when he hasn't been there. So, yes, favorite, runaway, not yet.
All right, fair enough. I like playing that game with you, and I'm sure we'll be playing that game many
Not
more
our
times
last time.
Down the stretch. But we were talking about me being on the ice with Amanda Kessel earlier in the show. She's going to be on NHL Now next Tuesday for our all-female edition of that show. And there's a lot of this happening to celebrate women in sport and in hockey. I know Canada's doing one as well. Mm-hmm. But Kate Scott is going to be on the call for the Blues-Blackhawks game Sunday, March 8th. She's going to be doing play-by-play. It's not an easy thing to do, but we are super excited to have Kate Scott join the show. Kate, how are you and where are you calling us from today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, you guys. Thank you so much for having me on this morning. I am calling you bright and early from Oakland, California, out near San Francisco, beautiful Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. It's a great day to talk hockey.
Oh, my goodness. 3-hour time difference. Are you a morning person?
I am now.
Yeah. So, as of 10 minutes ago.
Exactly, Mike. I never thought I would be a morning person because I used to, you guys know, there's no normal shift when it comes to covering sports.
No.
So for the first 6 years of my career, I was working till 11 p.m., midnight, and I told myself I would never work a morning shift. And then the big sports radio station out here in San Francisco, of course, called my bluff and asked if I wanted to wake up at 3 a.m. and work the 5 a.m. morning show. And I did that for 6 years. So after doing that, after waking up at 3 a.m. for 6 years, you can do anything. So this feels like the middle of the day with you guys. Right
oh, my
now.
Goodness.
Wow, that is commitment. Morning radio, while it's important, I don't think I could do it. Because you have to stay up late at night to watch the sports you're going to talk about in the morning.
Yep.
You can't cheat by going to bed at 7 p.m.
That's a good point.
Because you have to know what happened in the evening before. So kudos to you. Now, you said you could do anything now. So does that make calling an NHL hockey game seem easy for you because you've woken up at 3 in the morning for years, which I think would probably be harder.
Well, I think they might be kind of equal, Mike, but I am really excited about this opportunity. And as you guys said, I mean, I call everything from men's soccer to women's volleyball to football, but this is the fastest sport I have ever called. And I always said, kind of dating back to the, I'll never do a morning show. I said, I'm never going to call hockey. It's just too damn fast. And leave it to the pros who grew up around the game. And then the more you do something, right, the more years that you're doing whatever it is, whether it's analysis or hosting or play-by-play, then you start to think, man, I love that sport. Maybe I was just kind of scared back in the day. And maybe now I'm ready to do this because I grew up watching the sport, even though it's strange out here in California. But grew up going to minor league hockey games. My pop and I would head to the Fresno Falcons, who were like minor mm-hmm. leagues. But it was a great time, right? Dad was having beers. I was going down and getting sticks and pucks between periods. And then when I was kind of 12, 13, the San Jose Sharks were mm-hmm. born. And as somebody who grew up cheering for Bay Area sports teams, all of a sudden I had a professional team to get behind, and that just kind of took my love to another level. So that was a roundabout way, I think, Mike, of saying this is going to be darn hard, but I can't wait for the challenge and to be surrounded by such incredible talent like AJ and Kendall and Jen and KT. I mean, I think it's going to be a blast of a Sunday.
Well, you sound like someone that embraces a challenge. That's for sure. I know you've done a couple of rehearsals. You've been going to games, getting prepared for this as anyone would. What do you think your biggest challenge will be in calling the game? Is it the speed?
I think it is the speed, Jackie, and thanks to those practice games, and that's the thing. When NBC approached me about this back in January, I literally I said some things that I can't say on air back then. And then pretty much said, okay, thanks so much, hung up. And then they knew that I was joking, and I kind of did too, called them back and said, okay, how's this going to work? And they have been so incredibly supportive throughout this process in flying me across the country to call practice games. You know, it was so helpful that Kendall and I were in St. Louis just last week getting to call that mad 6-5 regulation win by the Blues. So getting to see the two teams already for three periods, getting to call 11 goals, I mean, that was invaluable. But yeah, I think it really has been the speed. But thanks to those practice games, I got down to San Jose, got to call one there. We were in Chicago, AJ and I, for a game back at the start of February. So that's the main thing. But again, I'm so thankful that I grew up knowing the sport. So really, it's just you got to know the names and numbers, because mm-hmm. as opposed to every other sport I call, there is literally no time to
no
look down
time.
At your spotting
nope.
boards, as we call it. You know, there's time if there's an icing, right, Mike, you know, or if there's a penalty called. You have a few moments to tell a story, or if they're reviewing something. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you better know exactly who is paired with who on every line. You better know the defensive pairings. You better know everybody just by sight. So that's the big thing, and I'm definitely flashing back to college with my flashcards this week.
Yeah.
But having
nice.
having a great time with it.
I know it very well. You know, I call a lot, or don't call games, but I'm an analyst for games, and you know, you go do the world championships, kind of same kind of thing. You got teams you don't know, you're trying to grind out, just getting familiar with everyone so that mm-hmm. it becomes instinctive, and that's where your natural play-by-play skills will come out, because you'll be comfortable, because you've done play-by-play. But maybe just tell us about your history of doing the play-by-play, because you've been a bit of a trailblazer in that regard as well, with football and some other sports, with some of the games that you've called.
Yeah, and none of it has been, hey, I really want to be the first to do this, right? I don't think very many folks who have been the first to do something did it because of that. Mm. It's just been, I had a passion, and I've been lucky to be prepared and be in the right place at the right time and know the right people to have them say, hey, we haven't had a woman do this before, but we know you've been busting your tail, and we think you're ready for it. So to run through things real quick, yeah, I started as a high school football play-by-play announcer out here in the Bay Area. I was the only girl doing that years ago. I'm an old lady now, but was doing that, and then slowly but surely got into calling all the other sports. I did sideline like a lot of women do for soccer and baseball and basketball, and then after folks saw the football play-by-play, they said, well, if you can do football, let's try these other sports. So now I call men's and women's soccer. I call women's volleyball, and I call football in the fall. Just got done wrapping up men's and women's basketball season and hockey now, potentially.
Yeah, there
we'll
you
see,
go.
We'll see how Sunday goes. And then in the spring, I call softball. So it's just kind of been, you know, it's like learning the subject, like you said, Mike, whether you're really familiar with the NHL and then you have to go get familiar with a whole bunch of new teams and names doing the world championships. Right. It's the same thing with sports. I grew up playing and watching everything. So now it's just learning the teams and the players and then diving in and having fun.
It's okay. But I'm curious about the process of it, because it's fascinating to me, because every sport is different. Every mm-hmm. broadcast has their own nuances, their own rhythm. And it's important that the play-by-play people kind of set the tone for the game. So your style would be uniquely yours, but how much do you tailor it to whatever sport you're doing? Because they're all very, very different.
Yeah, And that's been one of the reasons, I think, Mike, that I love doing so many different sports is because, as Jackie mentioned a little bit earlier, I kind of enjoy challenges.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that I enjoy calling all the different sports, because they challenge you as a play-by-play announcer in different ways, because you are the point guard, the center, the whatever you want to call it, depending on the sport. And you do set the tone for the broadcast. And in some, I'm much more vocal. I think Sunday's going to be a good example, right? In hockey, versus pretty much every other sport I call on television, I will be trying to do mostly a radio play-by-play call because it is such a fast-moving sport. So you'll hear a lot more of me versus when I'm calling volleyball. I really try to just let the action speak, call maybe, because it's another fast-moving sport, maybe call who makes the final kill, and then really just get out of the way for my analyst. And very much the same way in basketball, on television, nobody cares what I'm saying, because everybody can see what's going on. You know, there's only five people on the floor, so I'll call out, you know, Johnson hits the three, but then I'll really get out of the way and let my analysts say how they were able to get the ball to that player, why they were so open, or what good move they made. So that's really one of the things I enjoy about getting to do play-by-play is sometimes hearing a lot of me and sometimes not hearing very much of me. But more than anything, as somebody who played kind of all those captain, point guard, quarterback positions back in the day, I love making other people shine and letting the game shine as well, and then just trying to get out of the way. So hopefully that's what we can accomplish on Sunday.
She obviously saw my high school basketball tapes where the Johnson hit the three. I mean, clearly you were doing your research. I love it.
You're a distance shooter, Johnny.
No, I would just go in the lane and get fouled, make my living on the free throw line.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. It's an important distinction, though, that you make between TV and radio and how that changes the job, because I think, you know, casual viewers or you know, sports fans don't really realize that very different from the broadcaster's standpoint. But it's going to be a huge day on Sunday. I'm super excited about it. I'm excited to watch it. For you, what does it mean to you to just sort of be a part of something that really pushes women to the forefront and celebrates what women are doing in sports?
Yeah, I'm so honored, Jackie. And to be honest, just a couple of years ago, I was pretty wary about broadcasts like this, right? Because some people might say, well, wait a second. Why today? Why are we bringing all these women together? And I was one of the people who kind of pushed back against that idea. And then when I talked with the folks at NBC back in January, I've been working with them for a number of years calling basketball, and I kind of pushed them on that. And I loved the response they gave me, and that's why I'm so honored and excited about Sunday. And they said, look, Kate, this really isn't about you. This is about
perfect
the fact,
answer.
Right? As soon as they said that, I was in. And they just said, this really isn't about you. You know, this is about the growth that we have seen among women in hockey the past couple of years, right? We all know Kendall with the lap in San Jose last year. I mean, that electrified us here in the Bay Area. So to see it go worldwide, the ripple effects, that was so cool. Then to see the three-on-three in St. Louis for the All-Star game. Then to see just so many other aspects of things. AJ already working in the NHL. Same with Jen. Same with Kendall. And they said, so this really isn't about you. We just think you're darn good at play-by-play. And we think it's really important that young women who love this sport see that maybe they can't be a Kendall skating the fastest lap, but they love watching the sport. Maybe they could one day call it. Maybe they could direct a hockey broadcast. Maybe they can be a camera woman on a broadcast. So they said, we're just really trying to ride that wave, and we think it's about darn time we did something like this. So if you're interested in that, then we'd love for you to call the game. And that really just put me over the top because, you know, I understand the folks who are kind of scoffing at this, but I think that all of us do this day in and day out, and it's awesome that they're bringing all of us together for this one opportunity to do it together, and hopefully we'll inspire some young girls. And also, Mike, I think you know this. I mean, it's great for young boys to see this, too.
Absolutely.
That they grow up seeing, oh, wow, okay, yeah, women can do that, too, because it levels the playing field, it changes things. So hopefully this is the first of many, and hopefully it inspires a lot of folks who are watching on Sunday.
Yeah. And hopefully we get to a point where you're doing this, and it's a group of women, men, whoever, and maybe it's just she's just doing a game. It's not a story that she's doing. She's just doing another game. And it's important to note, it's not just the on-camera people.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, production, direction, tape ops,
camera
producers, all that stuff also will be staffed by women, which will be great. Have you had many moments like that where a young woman, a little girl, listen, I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old daughter, and they love watching sports.
You're a girl dad.
I am a girl dad all the way. Love being that. Have you had moments where people have come up, whether it's related to this game or other stuff you've done, and say, you know what, a parent, a kid saying, you've given me reason to believe, or I've been inspired by you to take journalism in school or to try my hand at something that I didn't know I could do because they saw or heard you doing what you do?
Yeah, I have, Mike, and those are some of the favorite moments of my career. A lot of people ask, oh, it had to be incredible calling the 49ers preseason games back in 2016. I'm sure that people will ask about Sunday's game as well. And those are all wonderful because as a broadcaster, I just always want to grow and get better and challenge myself. But when it comes to the things that I really remember, it will be those moments running into a little girl as I'm putting on my lipstick in the restroom and them saying, oh my gosh, are you Kate? Are you calling the game today? I watch you all the time at home, and I can't wait till I get older. That's what I want to major in college. You know, just last week I had a young woman who I met when she was a seventh grader for a history project she was doing, and she, for some reason in seventh grade, wanted to do a project on women in sports broadcasting. So I talked to her years ago, got an email from her out of the blue. She said, hi, I'm a sophomore in high school now, and I really want to do play-by-play because of our interview. I was wondering if I could come shadow you. And a couple weeks ago, she sat beside me as I was calling my last basketball game of the season.
That's so cool.
Had a blast. We had her on headset so she could hear the producer and the director and kind of hear what it's really like to be a part of a broadcast. So yeah, Mike, those are, again, not
getting me emotional, Kate.
I know,
don't
too.
Do that. I have daughters that age.
Do it,
don't
right?
do
it's
that.
Not why we do it. I'm sure you guys get the same thing in any public figure kind of job. I'm sure you guys get the same thing. And for me, I'm so glad you brought that up because that is just one of the awesome kind of side effects, inadvertent things that I'm getting to do what I love and I'm really passionate about it. So if that can inspire one kid somewhere, then it's been a good day.
Well, we know based on that story, you have at least inspired one. And kudos to you for making time for her because that's what making an impact really is. It's not just, you know, talking the talk. It's walking the walk and saying, come to the broadcast. Like, let's really do this thing. So I love that story. And I was getting chills, as I'm sure you were, Johnny, listening to it. I want to go back to your hockey fandom out in the Bay Area, the San Jose Sharks. I imagine you were watching the postseason last year. I have to ask you about the epic game against the Vegas Golden Knights and everything that transpired in that period. As a fan, Kate, how were you reacting? Because, you know, when you work in sports and you watch sports all the time and you cover it for years and years and years, you think you've seen everything, right?
A little desensitized
to stuff. You get a little desensitized. That's a good way of putting it. But that was something that we have never seen. No. How did you react?
Oh, my gosh. It was incredible. And one of the cool things, as you guys know, too, especially when you start covering certain sports year in and year out, you kind of get desensitized because the team you used to love, well, now you find out that there's great people and coaches and players on all the other teams. And kind of the fandom evens out. But San Jose, the Sharks, has been one of the few teams that I haven't covered professionally yet here in the Bay Area. So I've been able to just stay a fan. So it was phenomenal. It was so fun just being a fan. And I was so excited for all the hardcore Sharks fans. You know what I'm talking about. The folks who the NHL and the Sharks are the only team. They could care less about the 49ers or the Golden State Warriors or the San Francisco. They don't care about any other sport. They live and breathe hockey. So to see how excited they were, I think that just kind of raised my level of excitement. So, you know, it's been a tough season out here in San Jose, and I think it'll be a changing of the guard in the next few seasons. But we love Team Teal. We love our Sharks out here, and looking forward to what can happen in the future. That was just crazy last season.
Is Jumbo coming back for one more year? You're out there. Give us the goods.
Is he going to play till he's 50? I'm wondering who's going to retire first, Jumbo or Tom Brady, right?
Well, it's not Tom Brady. I mean, Jumbo's got he'll be fully gray in that gray beard of his before he goes down.
Yeah, seriously. But listen, Kate, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you for taking time and early morning time, too, to come on the show and hang out with us. We appreciate it. Have a great call on Sunday. And again, for those of you watching and or listening to this show right now, it's Sunday, March 8th. It's the Blues versus the Hawks.
It's a big
show
game
here.
As well. This is not a throwaway game. Kate, this one is
this
one's important.
Right? No pressure.
No.
You just want to call Blues Blackhawks in Chicago, Kate? No pressure. Sure.
Yeah.
Let's
dive
in. But they have no margin for error to try and make the playoffs? Come on in.
Oh, it's
absolutely.
It's
no
going to be
spot.
So fun. Have a great call. And we look forward to listening and watching you on Sunday.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you for the support and for having me on. I've been watching you for a long time, so this was really cool. Enjoy the rest of your week.
It's amazing.
She's great. That was a great
story. I'm not going to lie to you. She had me. She hooked me in.
Yeah, when she was talking about the little
personality,
girl in the seventh
just
grade
the journey,
and then the high school.
All of it.
And...
yeah, she's compelling, which
yeah.
will be fun.
I think
I'll be watching.
I wasn't familiar with her full backstory in terms of from a hockey standpoint.
Yeah.
So to hear how she sort of grew to love the game and going, I mean, when you're going and watching a minor
That's
league
like the
team,
Whipple,
I think is how she classified it.
I think we called it the Whipple, the Western Pro Hockey League.
Yeah.
It was like AHL, ECHL, everything else.
Yeah.
It's like single A baseball way down there. And to go to see that with your dad and the memories, but you have to love the sport to go
yeah.
watch it like that. So.
And for a lot of people, truthfully, like that's where it starts, is in the arena, not yeah. watching a pro team. It's watching, you know, youth hockey or watching your siblings play. Like that's where you really,
yeah.
and playing hockey, of course.
Being around it firsthand.
Just being around it at a grassroots level. I can't speak today.
It's okay.
Not sure what's going on there.
It's a good day for a podcast.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Anyways, we'll be watching that game on Sunday. I think it's really important to highlight what women yeah. are doing in sport.
And I think the one thing you said, not just for women, men, boys.
That was a really solid point by her.
And absorb what's going on. And if you're a person with a young son, you know, you can have a conversation about what it means and why it matters and why it's important. And maybe not just changing a female perspective. I'm girl dad all the way. I have nothing
yeah.
but girls. I love them more than anything in the world. And I want them, I'll make them watch and make
yeah.
them hear and know that anything's possible, but also for people with sons to know, and men to know why it's important and to change your perspective about roles and what should happen and who should be pigeonholed where in all types of stereotypes.
It's a good point because, you know, I've never really thought about it that way. And that's probably from, you know, just the society that I grew up in. And so you're right, and she's right. It is important for young boys to mm-hmm. see that as normal and
see
to understand
it as
acceptable and just, it yep. is what it's just normal. It's
as
just
it should
how
be.
The world
as
is.
It should be.
While I have you emotional though, since we're, you know, we're talking girl dad,
mm-hmm.
we're talking good moments, good stories with Kate. We got to talk about Bobby Ryan. I know
oh,
this is
goodness.
A little, I mean, in the 24-hour news cycle, it's old, but
no,
I want to talk
not.
About it
it's not
specifically
old.
With you because, I mean, I'm sure anybody listening has heard the story, but if you haven't, Bobby Ryan plays in his first game in Ottawa
yeah.
After, you know, a leave of absence in the player assistance program.
Just over 100 days of sobriety.
Yeah, alcohol issues. Comes back home to his home barn, scores a hat trick, and... To even try and describe the emotion of that game is almost impossible
yeah.
to do. It's the moment of the season for me, from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
I cried more than once watching the videos and hearing him talk afterwards. But as somebody that played in the league, when mm-hmm. you think about what Bobby Ryan has been fighting, even before leaving the league
oh,
to
God,
deal
yeah.
with it,
since he's a kid.
How hard,
since
you
kid.
Know, to play in the best league in the world and so, have that going on the outside, I can't imagine.
It's amazing he's been as good as he's been in the
yeah.
NHL for as long as he has been with the turmoil that he was dealing with internally, mentally, emotionally. You can read his backstory. It's quite a story
mm-hmm.
with some of the stuff he had to deal with growing up as a family. Contributed to him, you know, struggling with alcohol. And, I think... it's easy to kind of pretend it's not an issue. And I think Bobby talked about, you know, he just kind of did that for a while and it was
yeah.
a problem and he didn't want to acknowledge it. You don't want to admit weakness. You don't want to pull yourself out of the game. You don't want to be typecast as a guy who had a problem, even though I think we're slowly changing and saying it's okay. It's okay that you did. And it takes more courage. You're stronger
oh,
for saying,
big time.
I have a problem, I'm getting help, than trying to grind through it and not dealing with. So I think just the strength he had with the help of his family, he talked about his wife a lot, to take the step.
Yeah.
And after that, nothing really mattered. Whether he comes back and plays hockey, it didn't even matter.
It's about getting
he's
himself
going to,
healthy.
He's going to live life.
Yeah.
And so now part of his life is hockey. That's part of what makes him happy. And so, you know, in Ottawa, he makes a lot of money. There's been consternation about, you know, not worth his contract. And he's not. But in that moment, when he comes back, to feel the support, which was genuine and true, from that fan base, recognizing what he'd been through and the journey back and how hard it is that moment and going forward, and then to come home and three goals and
they're chanting for the crowd, Bobby.
They're chanting, he's crying on the bench. I'm like welling up now, I'm welling up watching it. I know Bobby because I cover Ottawa games. He's a loved guy for who he is in the room. It was just one of the best moments, showing great strength, humility with what he's been through, and to just getting back to playing. That's all.
That's a win.
That would have been the fairy tale movie ending.
Yeah.
To score three in his first game back, in home in front of his family.
And the crowd chanting your name.
The crowd chanting your name. The reaction of his teammates, like Brady Tkachuk. I'm like, I used to love some guys when they get empty netters, they turn into Superman. I used to like Mike Comrie. You know, he'd lose a battle, little guys about your size, and then he'd get an empty netter right there. He'd be throwing guys out of the way. I'm like, where is that strength?
Yeah.
And that's when Brady Tkachuk, who always plays that way, but Brady Tkachuk went in the corner with an empty net, and Bobby's got two goals. I'm like, there's no way Brady's not getting this puck to Bobby. Like, it's like everything in me knew, like, he's going to find a way.
Yeah.
He's going to. And sure enough, he throws everyone out of the way, gives it to him. He scores the hat trick. And to see the bench, the joy that they felt
genuine.
For him.
Yeah.
In what's been a tough season, the connection that is there, it reminds you in many ways everything we love about sports, everything I loved about playing and being in the room. And like, we got Russians and Swedes and old people and young people and Americans, and it doesn't matter. They were a family in that moment, and they cared about him, not, oh, cool, hat trick, that's a lot of goals. It's like Bobby the person.
Yeah, like we are happy that he is having a happy moment right now.
One of the best moments. Could relive that one all day.
Oh,
amazing.
My gosh.
And credit to Bobby, family, wife, all that, and we're pulling for you because, you know, there's going to be hard days going forward, but that was one of the best days of the season.
Yeah, oh, by far. And, I mean, we're talking, you know, about being in the booth, right? Imagine being on the call for that game.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, really, you just let that moment
speak for itself,
right?
Yeah. Like his face said everything you need to know.
Yeah. Oh, and I give him so much credit, too. I can't imagine going through everything you've gone through, even after scoring the hat trick, and then interview after interview after interview and talking about something that I imagine is not easy to discuss, hat trick or not.
When I've been around him the last few weeks, last few months, he's kind of been back, last month or so, he's been back in Ottawa. And I don't know if it's part of his recovery, but getting comfortable talking about it. He doesn't shy away from it. So, you know, I think maybe 6 months ago, he'd want no part of that conversation. I think after that moment, not because of the hat trick, I think he's probably still not easy, but more at ease, more comfortable, and just talking about what he's going through.
Well,
he's going through a great moment for the work, for the grind, to be rewarded like that.
Huge.
Awesome.
Huge.
Awesome.
And a good indication, to your point, of the bond that exists between him and his teammates.
That's every team.
In Ottawa.
That's why we
really,
love
really cool.
That's why we love to play.
Well, we'll go from one family to another family because we're already almost out of time, so I'm going to give you a couple little quick hitters
here.
No, you don't need to. I think that's the sign of a good show when it just kind of flies by and you look at the clock, which is up there. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I got to wrap this thing up soon. So from one family to another, we all know Patrick Marleau, Austin Matthews, and Mitch Marner have a special bond. And I respect it. I love it. I think it's great. Yeah. I love when, is it Christina?
Yes.
Christine tweets out stuff. It's Patrick Marleau's wife. I think it's great. However, I'm curious about your thoughts on Patrick Marleau staying back in San Jose to hang out and reunite with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, have a little family night.
So, I mean, I don't think he stayed back to hang out with them, per se, so much as he stood back to hang out with his real kids.
Mm-hmm.
The four-pack that he has
just
happened to overlap with the Leafs' arrival, and they would not pass up an opportunity to get the band back together, because one of the reasons Patrick Marleau was signed in Toronto was to shepherd this young group of players into professional life.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, his mentorship and the way he carried himself and the conversation they had and the dinners that they clearly had over the table and the mini hockey games they had in the basement
with
Mitch. Mitch playing goal for, you know, he had four kids that were about 10 to 4, I think, at that time when they started. And they formed a really close bond. So I guess two things. One, shows that bond lasts. It's not just about when they played for Toronto.
Yeah.
It lasts. And they are part of a connected family now. The other part is, it's a nice gesture by Pittsburgh, because not everybody gets these kind of perks or or treats to like say, okay, you know what? You can stay an extra day. You don't travel with the team. You can miss a practice, whatever it is, because he's played forever, mm-hmm. and he's going to be away from his family for the duration of the season because they're probably going to stay in California. He's going to be in Pittsburgh or wherever they're playing. So I was like, oh, that's a nice move by Pitt to let him hang.
For sure.
Because team's not playing well in Pittsburgh. They've lost several games in a row prior to their big win against Ottawa.
Which I want to ask you, too, about
Nice move by Pitt to let him do that.
The Penguins, a little bit of a losing streak there, but they get back in the win column mm-hmm. last night. Are you worried about Pitt at all?
No, because I think a couple things have happened. Last night, John Marino, Brian Dumoulin came back. So now I think they have all their defensemen healthy.
Okay.
That's big. I mean, they built their team this year based on structure, defense, and goaltending. And when you start chipping away at players coming out, in and out, and it gets harder to keep that tightness. And they've introduced some new players up front, with some of their, whether it's Marlowe, whether it's Zucker, trying to integrate all those people. So no, I'm not worried. They're going to make the playoffs, but they will be fighting because Philly's a good team. The idea that they will get home ice, which will matter. Philadelphia is one of the best teams in the league at home. You don't want to start in Philadelphia. So at least finishing second, very important.
Which could be a battle till the end.
It will be.
Yeah.
No, it could be. Will be. Yes.
We didn't even have time to get into the Flyers. I wanted to get your thoughts, so I'll have to save it for next time. Yeah, but I was going to ask you what has made them so good this year, because they're a team that, honestly, like, I didn't take all that seriously the first half. Mm-hmm. And I've been completely wrong. So we can talk about that.
We're going to do it next week.
We'll get into that. Are you back next week?
I don't know. 2 weeks.
Whenever you're
back next,
whenever you're back, we'll dive in to the Philadelphia Flyers. But before I let you go, how are you? You washing your hands, singing the happy birthday song twice. You're steering clear, doing all the things that you need to do to avoid coronavirus.
I heard the best analogy about washing your hands and how diligent you have to be. Like, wash your hands like you just ate a big plate of crawfish. And now you have to change a contact lens.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay,
that
is
clean.
That is making sure I get into every little nook and cranny.
Yes.
So it is a new reality. And I am washing my hands all the time now. And, you know, it's an unfortunate thing that the entire world's about to go through. And it's only going to probably get a little bit worse and will be impacted, whether it's schools or
I mean, at some point, this could impact the NHL.
And I was having this conversation. I don't even know what the answer is, and maybe we'll get into it. Hopefully, we don't have to. But I did like a smidgen of research. I don't do that. But I think it was 1912, 1860. They canceled the finals for like the Spanish influenza.
Okay.
I'm wondering, have they ever canceled games because of something?
Yeah,
pandemic thing. And I guess they had 100 years ago. We've seen leagues in Europe play games in front of no fans, and all pro sports, baseball, basketball, hockey, football. Like, anytime there's going to be 20,000 people in a small confined area, it's going to be something to think about. So hopefully we don't go down that road. But yes, I travel a lot. I fly a lot.
Well, that's the thing, right? When you're on planes all the time.
I pack wipes, so I wipe down.
I mean, I packed wipes before coronavirus
and
for planes
and all that stuff. So we're doing our best, and hopefully it doesn't escalate to where maybe it could.
And I'm going to re-echo this message for anybody listening that maybe hasn't heard it yet. Don't go buying masks in stock if you're healthy. That is not helping. The masks are for sick people avoid spreading. Yes. You covering your healthy mouth does not actually protect you from anything, because you could get germs in your eyes, in your ears, on your hands, and then touch your face later. It's a whole thing.
Yes.
Leave the masks for the people that need them. And also, thank you for listening to
the
Puck Culture Podcast.
Like you had crawfish and want to change your contact.
Yeah, you don't want to mess that up. That is for sure. Thanks for listening and or watching wherever you're coming to us from. We appreciate that you took some time out to listen to the Puck Culture Pod. We will see you next week.